You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
One of the biggest challenges of earning a degree as a military veteran is transitioning your goals and experiences to your next phase in life. National University gets it. As a veteran-founded Yellow Ribbon School, they offer post-9/11 GI Bill acceptance, dedicated military support and advising services, and credit for your military experience. That's why 30% of their students are military affiliated. NU, education that serves those who served.
Welcome to F1 Explains. We are located in Montreal, Christian Hugo, myself, and this is a podcast that really takes a deeper dive into all things F1 and answers your questions.
It does indeed. Welcome along. As Katie says, we are at the Circuit de Gilles Villeneuve in Canada. This is F1 Explains, and you can send us your questions to F1explains@F1.com. We're in the paddock, Katie, and my goodness me, have we got black clouds above us.
Literally, I posted a photo earlier talking about the blue sky and how it was good for the soul, and now I could literally post a dark cloud and why we all need to grab our rain gear.
If you look at a weather app at any point in Canada, it just says, yeah, all of it. All weather could happen at any point. It's unbelievable. We're obviously here to answer one of your questions. It's what we do on F1 Explains each and every week. And Katie, you've got the email that forms the basis, the heart and soul of this week's F1 Explains.
Yeah, I love this. Hi, Christian. Hi, Katie. I'm Sarah, and I'm a fan located in Alabama. I love your podcast, and I'm learning so much. Thank you for doing this. It's absolutely amazing. Thank you, Sarah.
Very welcome, Sarah. We're happy to be here.
My fiance got me into F1 back in 2019 by explaining the challenges of F1 being a team and individual sport. Very fascinating. Good approach. As my job requires a team atmosphere, forensic scientist, literally everything I do gets checked by another scientist and vice versa. This really fascinated me. My question is, why is F1 a team sport? Why does every team build their own car, unlike IndyCar, where all the cars are the same? Thank you for what you do and growing my knowledge. Keep up the great work. Sarah.
That's a lovely email, isn't it? Thank you, Sarah, for that. And coming up, we'll be chatting to Bradley Lord at Mercedes. You often see him sat next to team boss Toto Wolff in the garage across a race weekend. He is the chief communications officer at Mercedes, and his job means he keeps an eye across the whole team. So he's a good man for the job. He'll explain how an F1 team is organized and how all the different departments work together.
But before that, Christian, we're going to look at the first part of Sarah's question with a man who can help answer pretty much anything related to F1. And that's not just, I'm not just saying that because
it's
written down. It's actually true. Hence, he's such a friend of F1 Explains. Formula One's correspondent and F1 TV presenter, Lawrence Barreto.
Lawrence, welcome back to F1 Explains.
This is a heck of an intro. And I'm also touched that you call me a friend of the show.
You're such a friend of the show.
So nice.
And
so nice.
You are such an F1 guru. We're only buttering you up because we worry that we're about to get soaking wet as we sit under an umbrella here at Sauber, who kindly hosted us for this interview.
I hope it rains downward and not sideways.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, and you've also given me the worst seat here, which yeah. I'm on
such
the fringe of the umbrella here, and I'm the one who's going to get soaked here. Thanks. I appreciate that, guys.
That's why we gave you such a nice intro. That's why. There is a reason. Lawrence, you can help us with Sarah's question. The first part of it, if it was, you know, why is F1 such a team sport? So Lawrence, to look at the first part of that question, you know, F1's been a team sport since the very beginning, right?
Yeah, it's in the DNA of Formula One. I think later in her question, she was like, other sports like IndyCar, that it's a bit more formalised. They all use a bit more of the shared system. But for Formula One, it's all about doing it yourself. And I think when you go back to the roots of the sport, you had car manufacturers who wanted to get involved. It became a part of the business. They wanted to kind of promote their brand. Ferrari, for example, wanted to have a racing car division. They wanted to go out there and prove that they could make the best racing car. So therefore, that's why every other team wanted to go and say, I can beat Ferrari. So then Maserati came in and said, I want to build the best racing car to beat Ferrari. So it's all about the level of competition. It's not about all having the same car and seeing who can be the best. It's about the brand. It's about the team. It's about proving that your car is why other people should go out and buy your car, fundamentally.
Yeah, so it's always been so important for those historic manufacturers. And you mentioned some of the names of the past, but that everything you've said there still applies today, right? Where Renault are still in the sport with their brand Alpine. They've used Alpine to, you know, grow that brand. Ferrari want to be seen as being successful because it helps their brand across the world. That all of that mantra that you've said, it still exists today, right?
Yeah, I remember when Aston Martin joined the sport fairly recently and they wanted to come in to be a competitor against McLaren, because on the road in the automotive world they're direct competitors, so they wanted to enter Formula One and prove that they could beat McLaren, to prove to the world that people should go and buy an Aston Martin, not buy a McLaren. So fundamentally, it's that competitive desire to just win at all costs. And that's why you've got not a spec series in Formula One. You've got individual manufacturers who want to prove that they can deliver.
Ah, right as you said that, it was perfect timing for thunder to kind of resonate underneath you. Why does that set F1 apart from other race series?
What, the thunder?
Yeah, the rain coats, the rain boots, the wellies, everything that we have. No, this is one of those ideas that, like, really this can be a technical competition, so much so as, like, a race engineer can feel like, okay, check that box. A driver can say, yes, I'm doing well here. Someone else can say, I'm doing this great. Explaining it from that big perspective.
So I think when you look on a Sunday afternoon and you're watching the Grand Prix, you see a driver trying to do the best that they can. But what you've missed is the weeks and months before that, where there are thousands of people either at the track or at the factory who have put that car together. They've screwed the bolts in tight. They've made sure that that piece of bodywork is the best that you can have to enable that driver to go get the results at the end of the day. So I think it is a team sport from a perspective that one person can't do everything. You kind of need everyone to be working cohesively to deliver the best aerodynamic package, to bring a development to the car, to give the driver more lap time so that they can go from Q2 to Q3 one weekend. It's about everyone doing their individual job and their expertise coming through that really sets Formula One apart. I think we often hear them, people describe Formula One as the pinnacle of motorsport. It's because it's about technological advancement. So you want to deliver the best bolt you can. You want to deliver the best front wing that you can that delivers the most performance, because you want to prove that you're the best engineer in the world.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
We sometimes are guilty, aren't we, of thinking, you know, okay, Lando Norris wants to beat Valtteri Bottas, for example. There's driver against driver, but also, you know, the person who's looking after the development of the front wing wants to beat the person looking after the development of the other front wing. That team competition element runs throughout the sort of very DNA of the sport, doesn't it? It's not just driver to driver.
Yeah, it's partly pride as well. I think people want to be able to show that what they've developed, they've sat, you know, in the wind tunnel on CFD, the computer generated system, and developed something that is going to deliver pure performance. And that's where they really earn their money, I think. And if you talk to engineers up and down the pit lane, I think there's always a lot of respect for what other teams do. So it's not jealousy, it's respect for what they do. But then they want to go back to their factory and get an even better, you know, front wing or rear wing or whatever bodywork part is.
And that kind of brings up another good question. And that's that the rules say every F1 team has to build their own car, but the rules do allow them to buy certain parts from other suppliers. Can you help bring us up to speed exactly what that means?
So about 15, 20 years ago, Formula One was in the spot where you could use another team's car the year after. So for example, when Toro Rosso first joined the sport, they would use a Red Bull from the year before, and that would be deemed acceptable. The rules have changed now, whereby you've got to fundamentally design the chassis yourself, but you can kind of go to, say, a shop essentially and bring in the engine. So for example, McLaren use a Mercedes engine, Williams use a Mercedes engine, Haas use a Ferrari engine, but you can also get suspension parts, other parts of bodywork which is deemed to be acceptable, but all of the performance parts outside of the engine are supposed to be designed by you, because that's supposed to be the differentiator between whether or not you as a team can deliver performance and then therefore get a better result.
I find it so interesting that it still becomes as a surprise that it's a team sport. But again, to your point, each and every person here is trying to show and prove something along the way, whether it's, again, the person who's selling these cars in the big picture of some sort of, some sort of dealership, or here at a racetrack and people are trying to say, hey, we're the best and we can make things happen. Christian's actually getting his umbrella out.
I'm getting an umbrella and I'm going to give it to Lauren.
The team is scurrying around. I think they kind of want to move the umbrella we're under just in case it goes flying, because and the rain has started to come down and we are sitting outside.
It started to come down and everyone around us is running for cover. We're gonna plow on. That's what Formula One does.
It's what we do.
It's what we do. We crack it, even though it's actual hail, and it's gone from at the start of this recording.
That
being,
is hail.
It being glorious sunshine. It is now actual hailstones.
This is going to be stressing engineers up and down the paddock. They're not going to know
Speaking of that team sport, they need to do. Yeah,
exactly.
It's not hailstones. It's golf balls. That is unbelievable. Lawrence, to take it back onto topic, obviously the importance of building your own car is reflected by the fact that there are two Formula One World Championships. Katie, you just mentioned this a short time ago. One for drivers, one for constructors. Why is that Constructors' Championship so important?
Well, it's where the money's handed out, essentially. So that, you know, from a perspective of a constructor or a manufacturer, they want to win the Constructors' Championship because that is the prestige. The Drivers' Championship is actually, for them, slightly less important. Of course, they want to win both of them. But that's why we still call it a Constructors' Championship and not have an Independence Championship, because it is all about the team sport, everyone pulling together to get the job done. And that's why you've got teams up and down this pit lane who will offer bonuses. So, for example, when Red Bull win, every single member of the team, from the cleaners and people working at the factory
really?
To the team principal, will get a bonus at the end of the year for winning the championship. And multiple teams will do that as well. Oh, I'm just getting battered by the weather at this stage.
He's such a pro.
This is extraordinary.
What's extraordinary to me is the fact that you are giving us all this information like a true pro. Like, there's nothing going on around you, and yet everybody is scurrying, and your umbrella is getting closer and closer to your head.
and we knew we were getting some rain. I don't think we quite knew we were getting the end of the world, biblical, like Noah's Ark style rain. This is quite unbelievable. Lawrence, you were saying about the Constructors' Championship and how important it is. I've had people say to me in the past, well, all the drivers should be in the same car, then we'd know who's the best driver. This sport is about so much more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's why we call it a team sport, because it is about the car, and it is about what a group of, say, 1,000 people can do to get the best package together, to just getting battered by the hailstones, and what the best package you can do to deliver. And I think that's why the Constructors' Championship is so important, because it's about what you can do over the course of 24 races across the year. It's about what kind of development packages you can bring so that your car will add performance. We're talking seconds of performance over the course of a season. And I think you need to be rewarded for that. And that's why we've got this Constructors' Championship.
That makes perfect sense. Right. I'll tell you what we're going to do.
Literal hail is...
I think, Katie, this is a podcast. We need to take this opportunity to take a break. Lawrence Barreto.
Thank you, Lawrence.
Thank you for answering our questions.
Thank you for literally...
actual chunks of ice falling from the sky. This is like nothing
I've ever seen before.
Lawrence,
teammate, you've been a great teammate.
Lawrence, this is a low point, I'm not going to lie. This is a real low point.
Lawrence, thank you for being on F1 Explains. We'll be talking to Bradley Lord, and we'll find some shelter right after this break.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
One of the biggest challenges of earning a degree as a military veteran is transitioning your goals and experiences to your next phase in life. National University gets it. As a veteran-founded Yellow Ribbon school, they offer post-9/11 GI Bill acceptance, dedicated military support and advising services, and credit for your military experience. That's why 30% of their students are military affiliated. NU, education that serves those who served.
Welcome back to F1 Explains, and a little bit of a much better blue sky above our head. And I don't know how this has happened so dramatically so quickly, but we did find some sunshine.
That was the most chaotic ending to an F1 Explains interview ever.
Yeah, that was wild.
Where me, you and Lawrence thought we were witnessing the end of the world. Lawrence has been covering F1 for many years. He's been to more races than you and I put together. And he said he'd never seen anything like it at a Formula One race before.
I wish someone could have seen the size of that hail.
That was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. So yes, during the break, we've managed to pause our recording, wait until the sun's come out, and found a little bit of shelter, which is nice. So we're now out in the bright sunshine, which is where, Katie, I did our next interview for this week's podcast, Mr. Bradley Lord. Now, we recorded this interview at the start of the season at the Bahrain Grand Prix, and the irony did dawn on me when we were sat there, like, sheltering from golf ball-sized ice cubes falling from the sky, that the next part of this podcast comes from Bahrain, where me and Bradley were getting sunburnt. We're taking you to all extremes of weather in this week's F1 Explains. But yeah, Bradley Lord, Katie. Bradley is the Mercedes Director of Communications. He's got an overview across the whole team, right? So would you like to hear what happens?
I would.
Glad.
I don't know if anybody else listening would, but
find out. This is what happened when myself and Bradley spoke about why Formula One is a team sport in Bahrain. Bradley Lord, welcome back to F1 Explains for your second appearance.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
You're a seasoned veteran of this podcast by this point. Bradley, we're talking this week all about F1 being a team sport. You're in a fantastic position at Mercedes to be sort of with a very broad overview. I know the role you do at Mercedes, and it covers so many different areas. Perfect person to explain to us, how is an F1 team organised? What are the sort of main and biggest departments? I know this is a big question to tackle.
It is a big question. It's somewhat fraught with danger, because absolutely guaranteed once you ask someone, they'll forget an area and then someone point it out to them when they get back to the office next week. So I'll try and get this right, but for anyone that, you know, any areas that do get missed out, I do apologise in advance. A Formula One team is ultimately set up to design, develop and manufacture, surprisingly enough, a Formula One car.
Makes sense.
So you need the people that and the functions and the departments that are required to do that. And what generally makes F1 teams different to most other racing organisations in the world is the manufacturing bit, actually. The design and the manufacturing. The fact that as constructors, we are required by the rules and regulations of the championship to do that design and that manufacturing predominantly ourselves, not exclusively. Some teams can supply certain components, gearboxes, hydraulics, and other elements to other teams, but you are a design and manufacturing organization at your core, and that's what makes a Formula One team. So the biggest elements of our headcount, and we've got about 1,300 people at Brackley working at the Mercedes team, and that's just on the chassis side. There's then the power unit and powertrain development team in Brixworth as well. The majority of that headcount is in the departments the groupings that we would term technical and operations. So the design and development and everything from the very first concept designs, the aerodynamic development, the vehicle dynamics, and then taking you through the design office and turning the ideas and those concepts into actual component designs. And then from that point, the big resource that is the operational resource and the manufacturing in metal machining, in composites, and in all the other areas that we have, in order to turn those into actual parts of a racing car that then can be built, assembled, sub-assembled before being brought all together, ultimately in the race bays that sit at the heart of the factory, which is where we build the cars.
And in that factory, in the last winter off-season, I was lucky enough to visit Mercedes over the winter. and I walked
through. Who let you in?
I know. It was
I there?
I don't think you were there. Oh, it was an oversight on Mercedes' part. It really was, a rare oversight. But when I was sneakily allowed in and I walked through one of the offices, I was fascinated to see on the screens people working on subtly different looking parts, but tiny parts. So one computer screen has got this one, like to a naked eye, it could look like almost like a screw, but zoomed in sort of 100 times. And it fascinated me that that person is looking at that tiny little part that goes onto a slightly bigger part that goes onto a much bigger part that forms a tiny part of the car. It is staggering the amount of things a Formula One team brings together to make these things that we sort of take for granted of watching on a Sunday go racing. It's stunning. So how many people in the average Formula One team are we looking at? People like that that are doing anything from working on the tiny little part to being a garage and a mechanic. And I'm aware that this question will differ from team to team, but rough ballpark figure.
Yeah, it does differ from team to team. I guess we're looking, you know, across the design office, for example, that you were talking about. I think of the sort of sea of faces that we have at Brackley, and there will be anywhere from, you know, 150 to 200 people across that function, doing everything from, as I said, concept design all the way through to the purchasing activity that goes out to the suppliers and sources the components that we buy rather than make. And as you say, it's always incredibly impressive to see the car coming to life in this sort of 3D CAD, you know, sort of computer-aided design world. And, you know, for a layperson like me, you're used to seeing instructions and building something to instruction, like a piece of furniture or
a
kid's toy. I'm not very good at it either. But you've got instructions to follow, and then you get roughly what you expect out at the end. In this instance, there's no instruction manual, and it's always mind-boggling to see that ability to create the reality, or the sort of virtual reality of the car in 3D, and then for that to be translated into actual componentry made and machined from the right materials that then comes together at the end in the build process. And unlike how things used to be, where the mechanics were still effectively sort of designing the car as they modified components to fit, it comes together much, much more smoothly than ever it has done before in the history of the sport. And you see genuine assembly occurring at the end of that process. There's still little bits of optimization that the, you know, really skilled team in the garage need to do in order to get everything working harmoniously. We always discover bits that don't quite fit as intended, or you know, there's things either rubbing or elements that are not quite behaving as expected that need then improvement and correction. But it's mind-boggling to see actually how it all comes together in its complexity, yet perfect attention to detail as well.
It truly is amazing. And another thing that Mercedes obviously do that not all teams do is build their own engines. Mercedes cars are powered by Mercedes engines, but the engines are built in a different factory by a different team of people. And it's not just Mercedes. You see that with other teams. Take, for example, Red Bull on their campus, separate buildings with Red Bull powertrains written on. So it's not just Mercedes. But how does that work?
So, as you say, the power unit is made by a company called Mercedes AMG High Performance Powertrains. So a separate organisation, but part of the sort of same Formula One project. And the advantage and the real gain in doing that is having a very, very close exchange and collaboration between the works team, the chassis team, and the engine team on sort of not just receiving the product that is sent to you, but designing and co-creating the power unit and the chassis for ultimately the best possible lap time at the end, because there's no point having the most powerful power unit if it needs so much cooling that it costs you lap time aerodynamically. Likewise, there's no point having this perfect aerodynamic form that then the engine can't breathe properly and it doesn't deliver the performance that you need. So it's all about those trade-offs and that compromise and the balance between the two. And that's where being an integrated works team brings such advantage. And it means even now in the era of frozen regulations, where there's a freeze on the hardware and the software of the power unit, there are still tiny marginal gains to be found in calibration and in installation and all those sort of small areas around the edges that mean we're continuing to find performance even though the hardware itself, the specification, is actually frozen.
We should explain that a little, because as you say, we're in a period in Formula One at the moment where the engine development as such is frozen. So it's not like teams are going away from one weekend and saying, how can we make the engine faster? But it's fascinating to hear you say that performance gains can be made in terms of how the two parts fit together, how engine fits with car. That's fascinating. And therefore, I presume it is a bit of a disadvantage for teams like, for example, Haas, who buy a Ferrari engine, or McLaren, who get a Mercedes engine. Is that a bit of a disadvantage for them?
But yes and no, in that they're also not having the overhead of doing that design work,
of course,
and making the trade-off within their cost cap of, okay, we're investing time and people and effort into this work, this integration work. They get the benefit of it as part of the agreement they have with, you know, with the team at HPP. So there are sort of pros and cons. I think the FIA has worked very hard to ensure that all customers receive identical machinery to the works teams. That's really important to keep a level playing field and give customer teams the opportunity to be competitive, to win races. One could think that there is a potential disadvantage, but actually there's been a lot of really good work to ensure that being a customer team doesn't limit your competitive prospects in the sport. And I think that's really important to have 10 healthy teams competing in Formula One.
Absolutely. And it's not like, say, for example, Aston Martin or McLaren are getting a watered down version of a Mercedes engine. They're getting the same Mercedes power
Absolutely.
Unit that Lewis and George are driving. A reminder, you can send your questions to F1explained@f1.com, write them in an email or send us a voice note. Matthew in North Carolina has emailed us. Matthew says, can you give some insight into all the different people on the team that attend a race weekend? For example, on the pit wall, many of the teams often have up to about 10 people on the wall outside of the principal, the engineers and strategists. Who are the others? Same for the garage. It seems like there's a lot of folks in there. Bradley, can you shine a light on that for us, for Matthew?
I can try to shine a light on that for you, Matthew. Pit walls are interesting. So they do vary in size up and down the teams. We've got one of the smallest, actually, at Mercedes, because there's less pit wall then to ship around the world as part of your air freight, which is an included cost and part of the cost cap. So we just have four people on our pit wall, who are the sporting director, the chief engineer trackside, or chief track engineer, it's one or the other, I always get it wrong, who's essentially in charge of the reliability of the cars. We have the race strategist, who's running the race at track, and then Andrew Shovlin, our trackside engineering director, who's in charge overall of the cars and their performance across the garage and ensuring that both cars are at maximum performance in terms of setup and things like that as well. So those are the four sort of umbrella functions that sit on the pit wall. Then in our garage, you have the sort of engineering station in the middle. The mechanics jokingly call it Fantasy Island because it always comes up with crazy ideas from the engineering team.
Fantasy Island's fantastic.
So there's an old F1 truism that a pit wall is called a Pratt Perch and then Fantasy Island in the middle of a garage, which are phrases that have been in use for a long time. But that engineering station has Toto obviously sitting at one end of it and sort of overseeing operations. And then on each side, the driver-specific engineering team. So the race engineer, the performance engineer, who is sort of down crunching the data and working on that. And then we have tyre engineers looking at overall tyre performance, things like that. The trackside aerodynamicist checking the aerodynamic performance of the car. And then closest to the pit lane are actually the two technicians from HPP who are responsible for running the power unit. So that's our sort of engineering station. And then in the garage on either side, you have the teams of mechanics and technicians who are responsible for building the cars and operating the cars during the race weekend. So they will be in session, the team making setup changes to the cars and delivering those setup changes according to what the engineers decide needs to be done as changes. So the mechanics are there and delivering that. And then in the race itself, both teams of mechanics, whether they work on George's car or Lewis's, come together to deliver the pit stops. So that's a joint effort across the garage and across the two car crews to deliver then pit stops in the races themselves.
It is such a fascinating setup. And again, as we've discussed earlier, there must be differences from team to team. Just one example, your next door neighbours at Ferrari, you often see Fred Vasseur sat on the pit wall, whereas we see Toto sat in the garage. So presumably that's just a case of personal preference?
Yeah, I think so. Toto's always said he hasn't got a direct operational role. You know, he's not running the cars, he's not calling the strategy, but sits in the garage, A, to have an overview, and B, to be a bit of a sounding board for the team on the pit wall as well. So that's always been his approach and his preference. Other team principals, as you say, sit out on the pit wall and it kind of, as history shows, it works in either direction, whatever you decide to do in that regard. So So yeah, and then it's worth saying as well, there's the visible garage, so what you see front of house, and then behind the scenes is obviously a whole load more people that are at work in the races and across the race weekend. We have various sort of mobile workshops for things like composites, and you know, sort of floor repairs and preparing the floors, the wings, the power units themselves, hydraulics, all the different sort of subsets and sub-assemblies of the car that are prepared back of house away from prying eyes. You've got the garage technicians who are looking after the tyres, for example, which need just quite careful care and a little bit of a cuddle through the weekend to make sure they're looked after at the right temperature within the right windows when you're allowed to have the blankets switched on versus when they must be switched off according to regulation. And then you've also got back of house sitting on monitors and sort of watching telemetry as well. All of the team responsible for the control systems on the car. So all of the electronics on the car, the gearboxes, the sparkies who are looking at the electrical systems of the car as well. And then the power unit engineers themselves who are sitting behind the main sort of visible garage area and monitoring the sort of health and the performance of the power units too.
It's fascinating insight. And actually there are some race weekends that do get a little cold where cuddling a tyre would probably be quite a nice thing to do when they've got the tyre blankets on.
Has been known that we wrap ourselves in tyre blankets at cold winter tests. Not a problem here in Bahrain, but when it's minus two in a winter's morning in Jerez, that can be a lot more attractive as a prospect.
Motorsport can be very, very hot. It can also be very, very cold.
It's worth adding as well, we've talked the sort of technical functions of the team. We also have a sort of big operation here to look after the media, people like yourself.
Hello there.
And also all of our guests as well. So all of the partners, the commercial partners that the teams have, all bring guests to races, and we host people on lots of different sort of activation and marketing programs. And that's a big overhead and requires a big team too. So we have people in our team hospitality areas or in the motorhomes doing that guest hosting and sort of partner relations. We then have teams up in Paddock Club as well doing exactly the same for the hospitality experience up there. And that is also quite a large group of people that are managing that side of the sport, which is not the core part of the racing and the show itself, but a very, very important part of what makes Formula One, Formula One.
And keeping the team fed and watered as well, because, you know, they work such long hours, especially some of those mechanics, and I know what a big job it is to keep everybody, you know, running, quite literally fueling everybody.
100%. And we have, you know, you've got sort of grab-and-go stations in the garage with you know, high protein stuff, healthy snacks and things like that for the team that are on their feet all day. And then, as you say, you've got a hospitality operation either in the motorhome or in the team buildings that is doing breakfast, lunch and dinner on most days of the race weekend. And then at testing as well, you'll see the night shift coming in mid-afternoon, and they'll be having breakfast at 6 p.m. while the team are there, and then it will swap from breakfast to then evening meal for the team that have been here all day, and there will be a lunch at some point, you know, in the middle of the night.
It is a global 24-hour sport, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially at testing, there's so little time that we're running effectively a 24-hour shift to look after the cars and make sure they're fully serviced so that we can make the most of those 8 hours on track.
And it's so important to say, isn't it? I've watched Formula One racing on the TV since I was 7 years old. But only when I started, was lucky enough to start coming to races, do you get to see firsthand just how hard everybody works. The long days, the jet lag, the lack of sleep. You know, people, so many team members across each and every team work so hard to make sure we can watch racing. The drivers have cars to drive. It's this sport is such a phenomenal team effort, isn't it?
Absolutely. And when you're at the track, you're only seeing 10% of the organization as a whole, you know. So it's 100 people out of 1,000 that are working trackside, or, you know, whatever your proportion is. And yes, for those who travel, there's jet lag, there's all of those phenomena to cope with. But equally for the team back at base and working so hard in the factories, if you're in the design office, you're not able to take holidays when you will through, you know, from any point from really the end of the summer break until car build is complete and testing begins. You're absolutely flat chat 6, sometimes 7 days a week just to get all of the parts drawn, produced, manufactured, and then onto the car. And that sort of hidden commitment, the fact that when you go into the office at 7:30 in the morning, you leave at 6:30 at night, there's already people there in the morning and there's people staying way, way later in the evening, and there are these sort of contrasting rhythms within the season and cadences of a season according to the job you do. But the thing that it has in common is everybody always pushing absolutely to their maximum in order to ultimately try and bring as much performance as possible to the car and to the track.
Bradley, such a brilliant overview of why Formula One's a team sport. Really do appreciate your time. And do thank those team members for us, because without them, we won't get to watch the sport we love and listen to podcasts about it. So we appreciate it and appreciate your time, Bradley.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thank you, Bradley. And of course, minus the sunburnt, Christian, how was it?
It was lovely. Bradley has been around the sport for a long time. He's got great experience. He's worked at other Formula One teams. And he's a proper good person to get sort of like a real insight of F1. He's like seen it from all angles. He like looks across the whole team and has done so and seen F1 change from when he was with Renault to now he's with Mercedes. He's a fascinating man. He's also like, I think we said this towards the start of the podcast, he's such a key player at Mercedes. Like, he is next to Toto Wolff. He's like a proper right-hand man for that team. And last season, when Toto missed a couple of races because he had a medical appointment, Bradley was one of the people who like stepped up and like, you know, sort of steered the ship a little bit. So, yeah, great to speak to Bradley Lord. And great to speak to Lawrence Barreto, who had to endure more severe weather than Bradley did. Bradley got the easier ride in this week's episode.
What I loved was, in true Lawrence fashion, he sat there. Literally, the man could have been in a hurricane, and he was just like, well, this is why it's a team sport. Well, this, and that's, let me explain it this way. And like, I'm like, you eloquently put words together. You were getting pelted, Lawrence. The umbrella was hardly covering your body. We put him in a chair that was actually the one that was most exposed, to be honest.
Yeah, but the kit was dry, so you know. Lawrence will dry for free. Formula One would have to pay for this if it got broke.
I just love that it didn't faze him, and I'm like, that's a true professional. So
there was never any doubt that we wouldn't get to the end of the interview. It was just like, no, we'll do it, we'll keep going, we pulled together, Katie, as a team, right? And that is why F1's a team sport.
That's right. Now, of course, we do have new episodes every Friday, and if you want your question answered like we did for Sarah here, thank you again to Bradley and to Lawrence, all you need to do is send an email or a voice note to f1explains@f1.com. It's pretty simple.
Record a voice note on your phone, send it via mail, f1explains@f1.com. Do put where you're from as well. We like to know where people are listening in the world. Yep. Like, literally hundreds of, like, more than 100 countries listen to this podcast, so yeah, we love knowing where you're from. And over on F1.com, you can read Lawrence's F1 insights and keep up with all the latest F1 news. You can catch Lawrence on F1 TV, of course, over the course of race weekends. And don't forget to check out our other two official Formula One pods, F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Nation, which I believe we're sat here in Canada. Tom is on the ground recording and filming episodes of both of those shows this weekend. It's the Canadian Grand Prix is an F1 podcasting hub, Katie.
Yeah, yes it is. Well, yes it is. And of course, please tell a friend about this pod, whether it be, you know, a buddy, a family mate, somebody that you just want to talk Formula One with, or maybe even a motorsports fan.
A stranger in the street.
It don't matter. Just scream F1 Explains and see if somebody will, like, respond.
I am always tempted if I see someone wearing F1 merch in the street just to plug the podcast, but no. It's just not socially doable, is it? You don't go, by the way, would you like to listen to my podcast? It's just weird.
I just want to talk to the people who wear the merch. Like, I get so excited when I see some. I'm literally in the streets. My dad the other day pointed out somebody wearing merch, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I want to go do, like, well, the F1 Jeep Wave, as we coined at the very, very, very beginning. I just love to see people. Tell them about anyone wearing the merch. Just tell them about the pod.
Tell them about the pod. Don't be afraid. Just say there's a great podcast. You'll like it. It's called F1 Explains. And tell them that there are new episodes every Friday. So we will be back next Friday. Until then, for me and Katie, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This is Michael Rosenbaum.
Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.